Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
Eternally, Lord wrote, how much of God's sunshine has entered your life? How much time have you spent in the radiance of his presence? As we begin a new week, we are so mindful of the draining pressures and demands that are beginning to increase around us. So help us, Lord, for we need you to give us quietness and patience as we seek your blessings in all that we do here. We recognize that the surest spiritual search is made in silence. So help us find such quietness in each day to wait upon you so that we might be refreshed for what lies ahead. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keviny, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Pergeson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Bright Jones.
A quorum is present. Senator from the first. A quorum is present. The Senate is now in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 46th day, Thursday, March 29th.
Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, I move the further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. The senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I'm just thrilled today to be able to introduce two special guests, my dear friends, Kelly and Brian Estes from Columbia, Illinois. They're here today with their two children, Luke and Samantha, who will serve as pages of the day. I'd ask the Senate to welcome the Estes family.
The young people will serve as pages of the day. Let's welcome all these special guests to the Missouri Senate. Further introductions. Senator from the first.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over here on the side of the gallery, we have some visitors to the Capitol today visiting their capital from the Missouri Bicycle and Pedestrian Federation Day for 2012. And all of these folks are from the 1st District. And if they'd stand, as I mentioned their name, Dr. Susan Slope, Carrie Luster, Jim Jesse, and Ann Jesse, and a longtime friend who's been coming down here for many years advocating for his cause, Wes Ridgway. And I want the Senate to make them all feel welcome.
Let's
thank
welcome
you, Mr.
the guests of the senator from the first of the Missouri Senate. Further introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the House? If there are, would you please have those read?
Read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Joint Resolution 52, a joint resolution relating to bird, fish, game, wildlife, or forestry resources. Also, House Bill 1909, an act relating to sales of aviation jet fuel. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 1169, an act relating to spanking in schools. Also, House Bill 1046, an act relating to declarations of candidacy. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 1722, an act relating to proprietary schools. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 1126, an act relating to transportation. Also, House Bill 1172, an act relating to tax credits for certain contributions. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 1498, an act relating to sales of intoxicating liquor, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Third, what happened to him? Oh, there you are. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the governor?
Affirmative.
Would you, I would ask for a waiver of the reading and ask that it be printed in the journal.
They shall not be read, they shall be printed in the journal.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar. Senate Bill 677, the Senator from Johnson.
Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar. Senate Bill 677, the Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 677 be taken up for perfection for the informal calendar.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I do have a Senate substitute, and I would like to send that forward as well.
Send your substitute forward.
And I'd like to move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Senator, before you do that, you have another motion.
And that motion is?
You must move the adoption of the Senate committee substitute.
Okay, I would move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute.
And then send this forward and move this one's adoption.
And now I have a Senate substitute, and this very talented page is bringing
Senator,
up the Senate
substitute. Senator, has it been distributed?
It has been distributed.
The reading is waived. You move the adoption?
I move the adoption of the Senate substitute.
And proceed with your explanation.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Senate Bill 677 deals with the state takeover of an unaccredited school district. I think most of us in this body are very familiar with the Kansas City School District and the unaccreditation which happened on January 1st of this year. According to state statute, as it is right now, it takes two full school years before a state can take over a unaccredited district. So what would happen in the case of Kansas City, the state could not have a takeover until June 30th of 2014. Until June 30th, 2014. What this bill simply does, it allows the State Board of Education to take over immediately upon passage of the legislation and signed by the governor to have an immediate takeover of the of an unaccredited school district. They would not be forced to do it, but they would have the ability to do that. The Senate substitute also deals with the makeup of this of the SAB. It will be at least five members. Three of those must come from the Kansas City School District. And it talks about the makeup of the board. We've tried to work as much as we possibly can with the residents of the Kansas City School District, those in and around the Kansas City School District. And I think we've come up with a great compromise. So I'd be glad to take any questions, or if not, I renew my motion.
Senator wished to be heard on the motion to adopt this new Senate substitute. Senator from the ninth.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the Senator from Johnson?
Does the Senator from Johnson yield?
I do.
Yield, you may inquire.
Thank you. Senator, I know that this is a hard subject. I want to thank you for working with us on this bill. I know I've called you countless times over the past several months. It's taken a lot of time and energy just trying to come up with something that provides somewhat of a balance among all the other options that have been available so that our district can begin to move forward. I know this bill's not perfect, and not everybody at home, of course, agrees with it. But our school district has been troubled for quite some time now. Of course, there are other things that I wish could have been included in the bill, but I didn't want to compromise it at all. It's so vitally important right now to myself and for the 17,000 kids of our district. We need to be focusing on restoration of the accreditation status of our school district. 17,000 kids and an entire community that are at a crossroads right now. It's been great for me to see the amount of community involvement that has surrounded this issue, trying to put our heads together to try to determine the best outcome for our kids. So I want to thank the folks back home for their involvement, and again, you, for your openness and willingness, of course, to listen and provide thoughtful consideration of all of our requests. I recognize that you want to do what's best for the kids in our district, and so do I. So with that, thank you for offering this bill, and I certainly hope for its success.
Well, thank you very much, Senator. And, you know, you and the Senator from the 10th have just put in an incredible amount of hours since this whole issue really came up late last fall and then this winter. And I know every weekend when some of us go home, our schedules aren't near as full as what the two of your senators' schedules have been. So it's just amazing that the groups you've met with, the individuals, and I want to compliment you for doing that. And in fact, some of your suggestions certainly have ended up in this Senate substitute. And so we want to be sure that the ones that are going to be affected by it the most certainly have their input, and we included those in the substitute.
Right, and we thank you for that. You know, Senator, as you know, and some of my other colleagues know, I think we had a group of about 20 to 25 of our major neighborhood and community organizations that were meeting week after week.
Right.
I would leave here on Thursday to be home by 6 every Thursday for our weekly meeting. In those meetings, as I said, we had a good cross-section of folks that came up with those things that were most important to them, and those things specifically that they did not want in this whole process. So, again, thank you for your willingness to accommodate, listen, negotiate. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
President, to inquire the Senator from Johnson.
Does the Senator yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator. Look at that.
Senator. Senator from Cole.
Oh, my God.
The inquiry had begun.
Wow. Go stand in the corner in the round room.
You don't have to get it again.
Now you broke the law twice.
Mr. President.
Senator.
Mr. President. To inquire the chair, if I could.
State your inquiry.
You can leave now. You can leave now. Okay.
Senator, you gave him a fair chance.
Yeah, I gave him a fair chance. He can leave now, Mr. President. Okay. Mr. President, to inquire the Senator from Johnson.
Does the Senator yield again?
I do.
Proceed.
Again. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for yielding, Senator. I appreciate it, and I do apologize. I was not exactly in the chamber when you began your dialogue. Now I'm having microphone issues over here. It's just not a very good Monday. What is going on with that? So anyway, what I wanted to get to, and I apologize for this, I haven't had a chance to read your Senate substitute. I was aware of what was in the Senate committee substitute. I've been able to kind of flip through the first page doing the summary. Mm-hmm. I don't see that any new concepts are introduced, just kind of a few changes relative to the underlying accreditation process and the transition of the accreditation process. Am I correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay, and where I'm really going to, you know, there's a lot of talk about the redo of the foundation formula to deal with fully funding. That's not addressed.
That is not
okay.
Included.
There's also been a lot of talk about the quote-unquote Turner fix.
Right.
That's not addressed in this bill.
That is not. In fact, there is some language the Senator from the 7th put in that deals with this would not supersede or have any impact on the Turner decision. So that is
okay.
In here.
And the other thing, and I know I've visited at length more with the Senator from the 11th than I have with you about this, but one of the areas that we found out is if we were going to break apart the Kansas City School District, one of the unique challenges that a lot of people don't think of is the Kansas City public school teachers and the St. Louis public school teachers, they have their own individual retirement
right.
fund. And as teachers leave the St. Louis or Kansas City retirement fund and go into PSRS or PERS, it creates more funding liability for PSRS peers relative to someone transferring all their time and service, and that money from St. Louis public school retirement system or Kansas City public school retirement system not follow them. The only reason I raise that in this context is, as I saw on here, that you did add language in the Senate substitute that I haven't had a chance to read, 162.081.5, that adds language providing that no district or entity other than an SAB that is assigned territory debts or assets from a lapsed district will be considered a successor entity for purposes of employment contracts, unemployment compensation, or any other purpose. Now, I haven't been able to get into that, but are we talking about successor methodologies for dealing with retirement benefits?
No, it is not for retirement benefits.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. I just see the for...
Senator, you're exactly right. When, you know, the whole... Obviously, you're the chairman of retirement, so you have a better knowledge of this than probably any senator here. And as far as if you have fewer people contributing in to the Kansas City teacher retirement, also in the St. Louis teacher retirement, you know, what is that going to do with the surviving folks that are still there? And so I know you have a real...
It makes it very, very difficult to know, although I have my issues with... statements and actions taken by PSRS and peers. I also believe that it's the wrong public policy to basically take the unfunded nature or the challenges that will be confronted by Kansas City and St. Louis if their school districts lose accreditation, lose students, lose teachers, lose volume. That's not PSRS peers' fault, and it's definitely not PSRS peers' responsibility to pick up that unfunded liability that goes with those transferring teachers.
Right, and there's nothing in the Senate substitute that would allow that or encourage that to happen.
Okay, and I do appreciate that. I think that there's more people that wanted to talk on your bill. It looks like some people are dropping amendments and things along those lines. So I'm going to try to read that and get caught up to speed with all that, but I greatly appreciate the inquiry.
So
I may have more questions for you after I've had a chance to read it.
So the senator from Cole needs to get up now. In a moment would be a good time.
Yeah, when I was inquiring of the chair, that was his cue that he could leave as well, and he didn't pick up on that. So I was kind of trying to help him out. So thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 4th.
Inquire the senator.
Does the senator yield? Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I'll be very brief here. In your bill here, 162.081.3, Section 2, an SAB must have at least 5 members.
Right.
You know, I represent St. Louis Public Schools. Mm-hmm. We have a 3-person SAB. Could you explain a little bit the rationale behind requiring a 5-member SAB?
Well, and Senator, I think you realize that St. Louis is under a totally different statute. So obviously what we're doing here is not going to affect what goes on in St. Louis. I think that in the discussion that was going on, it was felt that there needs to be a larger number people that, you know, we had talked about how many should come from the district, and at least 3 of those 5 should be on there. I think it just brings more diversity. I think it means more ideas are coming on that SAB. And so that was what was brought up. I don't think that anyone looked at St. Louis as that's a bad thing or that we need to improve on it, but I just think that it was felt that 5 is a good number.
And you state in here that they have to be recertified every 3 years. Is that right?
How it works is that they would be appointed by the State Board of Education to serve on that. There is no term. There's no staggered term. They are just serving on that. I assume if someone left, then the State Board of Education would hire a replacement for that. Now, their responsibility is going to be every 3 years they're going to need to reevaluate where they are, and also to keep the legislature and the governor updated on a yearly basis on the progress of that SAB.
Okay, and one more thing. On the substitute, on the summary, the very first item, before they declare a school district unaccredited, they have to have 2 public hearings instead of 1.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I'm just curious what the purpose of that was.
That came from the senator from
the 8th.
From the 9th. To make sure that people, you know, what if you really want to be there and you couldn't attend that one meeting? And so it was determined that we have 2 meetings, 2 public hearings, so that there's plenty of public input. People can be involved in the process.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Great idea.
Senator from the 7th.
I have an amendment, Mr. President, and I move for its adoption. It has been distributed, and I ask for a waiver of the reading.
Send the amendment forward. Hearing no objection, the reading shall be waived. Would you like to explain your amendment, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. President, and I have moved for its adoption. This is an amendment that I also presented in the Education Committee the other day. So the Education Committee has heard this amendment, and the sponsor, the Senator from Johnson, and I have talked about it, and I want to initially thank him for his work with me on this amendment and the corrections that I'm proposing that we make. Recently, some reporters, who I guess have Sunshine Desi, have brought some very disturbing information to me. In one of the pieces of information they brought me, just a minute, let me find it first so I can explain it to you because I want to read it to you, is a 2008 letter from the then Commissioner of Education. And basically what that commissioner said, by the way, it was Kent King, it's not the present commissioner, I want to make that very clear, that in this newsletter they talk about Wellston, which was an unaccredited district, that they just decided to call it something else, interim. I'm just going to read their exact words because I can't believe they'd actually put this in writing. What they say about themselves is more damning than what I could say. It said, when Wellston became unaccredited, its students became eligible under state law to attend other accredited districts. About 100 students have taken advantage of that opportunity. Therefore, at the April meeting of the State Board of Education, I, this is the commissioner, recommended that the State Board grant interim accreditation to the Wellston District effective July 1st. The district will not be provisionally accredited, but it will no longer be unaccredited. This means that new students will not be able to transfer. Now, what they're admitting here is that Wellston's still unaccredited. They still did not make the standards that they need for provisional accreditation, but they're just gonna, well, let's say it like it is, they're just gonna cheat. And they're going to call them interim accredited so that the kids who are eligible to attend another school district lose that eligibility. They're taking away students' rights by just absolutely cheating and putting in a new term that they invented called interim. And so what this amendment does is it says that you can no longer make up a term interim, that there are only three designated classifications, which we have right now, accredited, provisionally, and unaccredited. Those are the same ones we have right now, and says that they have to use those and they can't make up something. Additionally, I was sent a letter that went out also from Kent King to the cooperating school districts with a section on here of how to get around the law, how to break the law, and they even write it themselves. Criteria for refusing students. Students are eligible to transfer to another district, as we know, and under 167.131, and here they put something out to districts in St. Louis, how to refuse students, how to take away their rights. So basically, all this amendment does is it says you can't cheat and make up a new term of accreditation. You also cannot advise school districts how to break the law, and basically says you have to keep the law. That's all it says. Desi, you will have to keep the law. And with that, Mr. President, I would accept any questions, and I renew my motion.
The Senator from the 7th has moved adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 677. Does any other senator wish to be heard? The Senator from the 15th, for what purpose do you rise?
Fire the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding. And I want to, on this note, I think this is an appropriate time to bring up another disturbing incident that has been ongoing now, incidents, plural, with regard to the foundation formula in Desi. As you know, we have now hit the final year of the phase-in. And the only mechanism under the law to deal with that is to reduce the student adequacy target.
Right.
Okay? Now, there's a lot of consternation about that, and shouldn't we all share the pain and all this other stuff? But the truth of the matter is the only solution that's on the table is a $60 million shift from districts, hold harmless districts, that haven't received any new money to the districts that have been receiving hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the phase-in. Now, we can talk about it not being fully funded, and I get that. However, we are spending more on K through 12 than ever before. Ever before.
That we are.
And the districts, like your, the ones that you represent and the ones that I represent, they don't get any new money because they were told they were never going to get any less money. And if they ever want any new money, the only place they're going to get it is local taxpayers. So while a lot of our rural colleagues probably get frustrated with us coming up here and talking about reassessment and all these issues, the root of that is this system we have in place to fund schools that, in my view, is incredibly discriminatory against the districts that you and I represent. And I think there are some ways to deal with that beyond just taking away from people that have never gotten anything new. And the reason why I bring that up, and I'm not a guy that generally stands up during introduction of guests and wants the press to pay attention to what I'm saying, but this is important because as we're dealing with this issue, in November, I had a conversation with the senator from Johnson and some people, I'll call them some educrats, okay, that talked about, well, if you don't accept what's on the table, the $60 million shift, look out. We just might prorate, and it can be worse. Okay? Now, maybe in some imperial state where the governor and DESE can do whatever they want without regard to the law, that makes some sense. But not in this world, not when we have a statute that deals with it. And so that's been floated around. And then I heard very recently from a couple of senators that there was actually somebody walking around saying, you don't need to worry about fixing the foundation formula. We're just going to do it ourselves. DESE's just going to do it themselves. They're going to prorate. Now, when the governor did that during the phase-in, after we passed that supplemental budget, admittedly, when we said keep the deal, admittedly the law was a little bit unclear. It is not unclear now. It is not unclear at all. But yet you have a department, and this is why it's relevant to what you're doing, you have a department that's telling people, we don't care what the legislature does, we don't care what the law is, we're going to do the politically expedient thing and take $60 million and shift it away from the Kirkwoods, the Parkways, the Lindberghs, the Pattonvilles, the Ledoux's, the University Cities. And I got news for you, they're not all rich districts, okay? Maplewood Richmond Heights, for example, is not anything that you would classify as a super rich district, but because if they want to pay teachers more, or they want to build new buildings, or whatever they want to do, they got to go to local taxpayers. And that burden is exclusively almost on us. When you get a couple few hundred dollars a kid from the state, okay, that's not a lot of money. But when you add it up over an entire district, the only losers in this scenario are the Hold Harmless District. So I appreciate you sort of watching out what DESE's doing, because I too am hearing this, and I think it is unconscionable that they would overtly say, we are going to do something that is against the law.
Thanks.
Okay, because it's an election year, and I guess they're worried about what some superintendents are going to say. But just follow the law. We'll deal with it. Right or wrong, we'll fix it, we won't fix it. But when they passed the last foundation formula, they knew it was coming on board. And the whole harmless desk, I wasn't here, but they would have never gone along with the deal if taking away would have been on the table. And so I'd like DESE to come out and say, that's not what we're going to do. I know they're not going to do it. They've been playing it close to the vest, but now they're getting towards the end and they're walking around the hall saying, this is what we're going to do, hush, hush, wink, wink, don't worry about it. So when it happens, and this is my only appeal to the members of the press, this is the first time I've ever done this, when that happens, beware, because it's out there right now. And what's going to happen, it's going to cost taxpayers a lot of money, because some school district is going to sue. And you know what? They ought to sue. And the DESE's going to lose. Okay? They're going to lose. But it will be passed an election year. And we will have taken from the districts that have received nothing new and spread it around. And then we're going to have to deal with the consequences. But because the law is pretty clear. So I know what you're trying to do here. I just thought this was a unique opportunity to bring to light what's happening. We've got this policy track, Turner et al. We've got formula track. And I don't know if we're going to get anything done because nobody here is willing, well, some people are, to have an honest discussion about the broader issues in the formula. You know, We have districts that are being paid for phantom kids. Phantom kids, if you have 350 or fewer students, it doesn't matter what your enrollment is right now. We don't care. We're going to pay you if you have them or you don't. We don't really want to have the conversation about the cost of living difference between St. Louis and Knobnostra. We don't really. Now, prevailing wage, we might want to talk about it, but not when it comes to the foundation formula. So let's just be honest. Let's get it all on the table. Let's do a rewrite. Let's sit down. I'm willing to spend from now until next session, but that's never going to happen because in 2010, when we created these super hold harmless districts, 16 districts plucked out of the air, Pattonville, Ladue, Kirkwood, Lindbergh, Parkway. You know what? You ought to have an extra surcharge because we think you're really rich in this crazy Robin Hood scenario that was justified. I don't know how. Some of the most conservative members of this body were okay with that just because. And I know when we look at the formula, we only look at the far right-hand column, what our districts are going to get and what they're not going to get. But let's just, you know, let's be honest. Let's do this the right way. And taking $60 million away from districts that haven't received any new money is completely unfair. And so DESE's probably going to do it anyway. But I want everybody to know that's what they're going to do, okay? Unless they tell us point blank they're not, that's what they're going to do. They're going to get sued. They're going to lose. And I guess we'll just deal with this some other time. But
Senator, I guess I stand here today, and it bothers me that you say they're going to do it anyway. They better not.
They shouldn't. It's
there
illegal.
There is a legislative branch and there is an executive branch. And what we keep running into is an executive branch that thinks they were elected lawmakers. We make the law, like it or not, the administrative branch, their purpose, that their responsibility is to implement the law as we state. So that's what this amendment does, and basically you're saying the same thing. If we set a foundation formula, dadgummit, we set it. We elected to do that, and they better not break the law. And they better not break the law anymore on this, and that's why I brought it forward. I was shocked by what I'm finding. And I do believe, I did talk to the Commissioner of Education, and I talked to President of the School Board, State Board of Education, and they were disturbed by the findings that I had, and they indicated, hopefully, that they're going to change things. I think one communication went out this weekend that said some of this is old and they're not going to tell districts how to get around the law anymore. But they didn't indicate this interim accreditation or cheating on that or naming anything else to get around the law. So I think it's really important since we've seen these actions. This is not, oh, we think it could happen. This has happened, and it cannot happen again. And I think with regard to what you're saying, you are really stating the same thing, one other topic, but we see it over and over and over in this administration. And I almost think we need a fourth grade education, the three branches of government and what their responsibilities are.
Right, because even if you think, okay, well, I'll be, when I go back home and DESE does whatever they're going to do, I'll be a hero because they did it and I saved. My superintendent can take me out to lunch again and tell me what a great job I'm doing. But I think we ought to care about the separation of powers here. We ought to care about the executive branch ignoring the law.
Yes.
There are much bigger issues here. And trust me, it already happened. It already happened in 2010 with that supplemental budget.
Yes,
but
I
think the law becomes crystal clear this year. And we'll see what they're going to do. So to the extent they choose to refute my concern that they're going to do it anyway, I welcome something in writing within 10 days to say they're not. But I
think
have a
we need some things in writing, and I have asked for that myself with regard to a number of things I brought up. With regard to interim accreditation, which is something invented out of the air, with regard to telling districts they don't have to comply with the law and how to get around it, with regard to a message that this Senate sent to DESE last session saying, get away from that QRS. You've got an employee as one of your assistant commissioners that has a conflict of interest, and she is writing RFPs that only she can fulfill through her Center for Family Policy at the university. And we have asked them, I've made it very clear that very rarely does a body send a message as strong as we did in that resolution with a cover letter signed by both Democrats and Republicans? Every leadership on the House and Senate side, I have asked for a response from that. So far, I haven't gotten it. But some of these things that go around this body and that go around this legislature has got to stop. And if it doesn't, then we have other ways of sending messages that are ultimate.
Well, and I would argue that if it doesn't, what we've effectively done by our silence, okay, if we don't bring these issues to light, we have ceded authority that meant to go to bureaucrats.
Right.
Never meant to go to bureaucrats. I mean, it'd be different if we don't have a foundation formula that governs what you're supposed to do. We do. And all I'm saying is follow the law. Now, should we fix it this year? Should we deal with it? Absolutely. But I think everything's got to be on the table for us to do it. And to your point, look, we've got a situation on the Turner issue. I think we've got to fix it. Now, it's more than just dealing with the receiving districts and the incredibly unfair mandate that without regard to classroom space or hiring teachers, you have no control, no local control. We talk about all the time in this building to say how many slots you have. But I also think reform should be a big part of that. And I think the opportunity to deal with those issues and get something done is ripe.
We
are now. What is it, April 2nd?
Yes.
First discussion we're having on this, and these are complicated issues, and they're going to take some time to deal with. But a lot of this is sort of this whispering about don't worry about the legislature, what they're going to do or not do. And I think that's offensive to our republic. It's offensive to separation of powers. It's offensive to the law. And so I appreciate...
It's a violation of the law, let's say.
It is. It's illegal, and they will be sued, and they will lose. But maybe that's just kicking the can further down the road so somebody doesn't have to deal with it in
election. And one other thing I would add, because you brought up Turner and you brought up formula, and yes, we've got a few weeks to deal with those. They're heavy issues. I think we need to deal with them. But the thing is, if we do, we've got some good fix ideas out there that take in the concerns of everybody. But if we don't, the present law stands. The present formula stands. It doesn't go away.
Right.
So that is the law if we're not able to change it.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
We are on Senate Amendment number 1 from the Senator of the 7th, the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 677, Senator from the 14th.
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield? She does. Proceed.
I was looking over your First Amendment, mm-hmm. and we spoke about this interim accreditation in some length mm-hmm. last week in education.
Right.
And as I stated, I've been the representative and now the senator for the Wellston School District when it actually existed. And, I came into a situation where the school district was already failing. Once the state decided to assign the interim accreditation, I wondered why that was the case. And in everything I read, everything I asked about, said nothing about trying to escape a certain situation. It was all financial. And I want that point to be made on this floor, because the way that it's been presented is that DESE said, let's escape the situation, here's how you do it, and from everything I heard, and I was intimately involved in trying to understand this issue, it was all about the financial issue with Wellston. They, at that time, depending on the state, 57% of their revenue came from between 53% and 57% came from the state. And while they were paying out the tuition for certain students, they were losing money and they couldn't pay their own bills.
Actually, the information we got in that committee says otherwise. And I thought it was
what
interesting.
The information
that we got in the education committee
from
when this
where?
Came up. From Mr. Dorson or Dr. Dorson of DESE.
And he said it was financial. Is that the one who works for DESE?
Yeah, what he said was, number one, there was no basis in law for them to do what they did. Absolutely no basis in law for them to do it.
There's no administrative authority that Jesse has.
Absolutely
there's
none.
There's zero administrative authority.
They have none to override the law like that. But the other thing
is it overriding the law?
If you'll just let me finish.
I do realize that administrative law was very difficult for me when I was in college. But one thing I do remember is sometimes when you are part of an agency, you do have administrative authority to pass certain rulings. And I'm trying to figure out where this assignment of authority, this use of their authority, went outside the scope of what is in statute. I just would like to know exactly where in statute it says that DESE does not have administrative authority.
It has to come through JCAR, and it never did. If they put a rule forth like that, it has to come through JCAR.
Is there language in statute that says such and such has to go through this person?
Oh, yes.
Because it's
every rule and reg
it's
has
the
to
board.
Come through.
There's nothing that's – I'm trying to figure out in statute where does it say that DESE does not have administrative authority. And I say that I completely agree with the argument that the senator from the 15th was making in terms of the formula. This is a different situation. We're talking about assignments that the board, the state board, provided. And I don't know where in statute, since you're so, frustrated about this, where in statute does it say that DESE does not have any administrative authority to make rulings like this in a situation where a school district has no money and cannot afford to pay out the tuition for students who are going to other school districts? Please let me know what chapter. I have my books underneath my desk. Please tell me the exact language and where I go and which statute, which book, give me the book number and the page, that tells us that DESE does not have the administrative authority to make assignments when there's a consideration such as finances.
Okay, I'll answer that. Number one is Dr. Dorson told us that Wellston had...
Dr. Dorson did not create the statute book.
That they have a $9 million budget at that time. They had 500 students, 100 students left, and at a cost of $1 million. So basically, they lost one-fifth of their students, but it only cost them one-ninth of their budget. So they were actually making money by losing students.
That is not true. I talked to Charlie Brown, who worked for the
State Board of Education
Commissioner,
admitted that they had violated the law.
Who was the superintendent, if you will, of the district, who was one of the employees of the state. That is not what he ever said. He never said that. Have you ever talked to Charlie Brown?
Yes.
Okay, so did Charlie Brown tell you what you're claiming right now?
The commissioner.
Because he never told me that. And Charlie Brown worked for the commissioner at the time.
The commissioner of education was horrified when she saw that and admitted they had violated the law.
She was horrified. So she needs to tell me that she was horrified. Because everything that I recall, Senator, was that this was a decision made based upon the finances of the district.
There was no basis in law to make.
And I have to say this. I have to say this, Senator, because I know I was in meetings. I was in meetings with the commissioner and with the senator at the time and other people. And I don't want to stand here as there is a cloud put on not only DESE in this particular situation, but on that district at the time. You're bringing a cloud on the situation. It was all based on finances. And for you to say that this was something that was created so the school district could escape law, I'd like to know where in our law it states that DESE does not have administrative authority. Where in law does it say that DESE does not have administrative authority to create a standard to protect school districts or any other reason?
I don't know right off where that is.
We're going to move forward, I'm sorry, I can't move forward on this.
Well, then just vote no. It's okay.
No, we're not going to get to a vote. We won't be getting to a vote.
Just vote
we won't be getting to a vote, Senator. We won't be getting to a vote. Because I have a fundamental problem with this, and your argument from everything that I know about is not correct. Your argument is not correct. If you cannot show in these statute books that are underneath my desk or underneath your desk, then we can't move on and there will not be a vote.
Well, then why did the Commissioner of Education admit that that was outside of their scope?
He wasn't around then. She wasn't the commissioner then.
Well, we're talking about
now. Well, she needs to come down to the side gallery and write down a note. Then she needs to come down here right now and send a note, because there won't be a vote on this.
Perhaps she's in the gallery or somewhere in the building.
Somebody needs to come, because there will not be a vote on this today.
That's
there simply will not be a vote, Senator.
That's your prerogative, Senator.
I know. If you want to keep us up, that's fine, because I'll
keep
talking.
But all we are doing is saying that they have to follow the law, that they have to do the...
Follow the law, then tell me where in our statute does it say that DESE does not have administrative authority.
I don't have the law books with me.
Then why are you creating this? Where are you creating
this
from?
Because I know it's wrong, but I can't tell you where
it is. Where is it coming from? This is the element of your amendment that I have a problem with. Now, what you and the senator from the 15th were talking about, I wholly agree. When it comes to the foundation formula, absolutely. I believe DESE is doing the wrong thing. Absolutely. But we're talking about this interim. And you struck a chord, Senator, because you're dealing with one of the school districts that I was responsible for and assumed. I didn't want to have a school district that was failing when I got elected, but in 2003, that was number one. That was on the front page of the Post-Dispatch before I was even elected. And then I knew that I had to take responsibility to understand what was going on with the Wellston School District. So I got involved, and I was there, and I heard from the parents, and I heard from Charlie Brown, and sent letters to Kent King to try to understand how much money was being funded by the state, Senator. And for you to say that the interim designation has everything to do with escaping the responsibility of the school district.
They admit it right here. They admit it right here. It's admission that it's in writing.
I don't read it that way, Senator. I don't read it that way. I simply don't read it that way. Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th is not in the chambers. Sergeant Barnes, would you get the Senator from the 4th, please? Senator from the 4th, the Senator from the 14th has asked for an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, we were in our committee last week, and this issue of interim assignment came up. And I thought that I fully explained to the committee what this designation, why it was assigned in the first place. You know, I understand that we no longer have Kent King, and we have a new commissioner. And I know that you are as passionately involved in your SAB as I was in the Wellston situation. And I said to the committee that, listen, everything that I heard, all the meetings that I went to, everything that I know, this was all about the financial considerations of a school district that's already poor. And even the gentleman, I don't remember his name, but even the gentleman that came up to speak on behalf of DESE stated that he would have to, he stated that absolutely I was correct. They had to make financial considerations. I simply asked the senator from the 7th just now, you know, how did they break the law? You took administrative law when you were in law school. I just did a pre-law administrative law, and the book that we had was written by the department chair. It was very difficult, and it's one of those courses that I probably would have taken again. But one of the things that I do recall is that certain agencies do have administrative authority. They have rulemaking ability.
Right.
And I have simply asked, where in our statute does it say that DESE does not have rulemaking authority? I mean, maybe you can tell me a little bit about rulemaking authority, administrative law.
I have no idea about what's in the statute about giving Desky their authority, but I think when I saw her amendment, I think it, she's trying to put in statute something very specific what they can and cannot do.
And why is it that a department, whatever the department may be, why is it a consideration for them to have the ability to create law, or not to create law, but to have rulemaking authority? Why is it so important for them to have rulemaking authority?
Well, they have to they have to implement the laws that we pass, and we give them broad discretion to do it.
And sometimes discretion. And sometimes you're in a complex situation where, hey, Wellston at that time was between 53-57% getting their funding from the state, you know, and they were losing so much money that the district couldn't pay its bills. I mean, I was sitting down with the superintendent in Clayton that said that they still haven't gotten fully paid. And this was last year, but they said they still hadn't gotten fully paid for the students that went to Clayton. Now, the letter is dated in 2008. And they still were in this process in 2009 and 2010. So, again, my question is, you know, how in the world are we going to take away the ability for an agency to create, you know, rules that are necessary for what their job is supposed to be? Now, this has nothing to do with what I believe in terms of the foundation formula, because the senator from the 15th on that issue, on that specific issue, is completely right, wholeheartedly. I'm not going to take that away from him because he's absolutely right on that. But in this situation, on the interim accreditation assignment, it was a situation, a specific situation, unlike other school districts in their situation, where they had to implement some kind of rule so that they can get out of the constraint, the school district could get out of the financial constraints in which they were experiencing.
I believe that. I don't know the story behind the Wellston School District, but obviously the senator from the 7th isn't very happy with it.
Yeah, well, she's saying that they broke the rules. I'm just trying to figure out where in statute it says that DESE or the Board of Education cannot create, does not have rulemaking authority. That's a simple question. Where in statute does it say that DESE does not have rulemaking authority?
I don't have the answer to that.
And you know what? This may happen with agriculture. This may happen with conservation. This may happen with any other department that we have. They have certain rulemaking authority. And so, we are talking about, you know, the separation of powers, absolutely. But within that, you know, that's why we have a governor who is supposed to put the right people in place for each of the departments. And then sometimes if there is a need for a new rule, then that should be designed. So do we go for every single rule? Do we go through the legislature? There's another bill that's up right now. You know, are we going to, I think the controversial bill has to do with prescription drugs. And then there's another bill that we're supposed to be hearing about, I think a CNA having the ability to do what doctors do. That argument is all about rulemaking of a board or an agency from the state. So for every change, are we going to have to go through the legislative process? Is that what this is designed to do? Do we not have faith in our departments to do what they're supposed to do? There's a reason why there's rulemaking authority. I mean, tell me, Senator, I mean, what's your experience in rulemaking authority?
It's pretty obvious to me that the senator from the 7th doesn't have that faith.
Well, it's obvious to me, too. I think you're right. You know, and I'm telling you, I didn't do so well in that administrative law class. You know, the chair of the political science department wrote the book, and the class was hard, and I'm not going to even kid. But what I do remember, what I do recall, is that agencies have rulemaking authority. Absolutely. And time again, case after case The Supreme Court has said that in certain areas that agencies have the ability to design rule in within their structure. They get to do that. So do you think it's a simple answer to just tell me where it says in statute?
I have no idea where it's
we got the books under here. We have, you know, researchers right over here. I'm just trying to find it because I'm unwilling to sit down until we find this area of the statute where it says that they don't have rulemaking authority.
I don't know. You can inquire of somebody else, but I don't know. Thank you.
Well, I think the senator from the 13th has something to say.
Senator from the 13th.
Unanimous consent to introduce very special guest.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To my left, last week I introduced all of you to my 18-year-old daughter. To my left, I have my 20-year-old son up visiting me, probably for the last time in my legislative career. And with him, his friend Emily from Lake Charles, Louisiana. They're on spring break from college today. If they would both stand and you give my son an embarrassing, warm welcome, I would
greatly appreciate it. Would the guests of the Senator of the 13th please ride, and would the Senate make him feel welcome? Senator from the 14th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
So that's your son?
That is my 20-year-old son, yes. Is the senator from the 15th will tell you, thank God he has his mother's DNA.
That's hilarious. Have you been listening to this conversation at all?
Kind of, sort of.
Okay, well, let me explain. Thank you for giving me that opportunity to re-explain. So we had a conversation in education last week, and what came up was a letter that the senator from the 7th found somewhere from 2008 in regards to the interim accreditation assignment that the State Board of Education gave to the school district in Wellston. And as you know, the former senator from the 14th was really intimately involved in the whole situation of Wellston. I'm trying to figure out who this came from. Okay. So Wellston was going through the unaccreditation situation. Many of the kids started going to other school districts, and many of those students ended up coming back to the Wellston School District. But for every single student that left, there is an amount of money that traveled with them. So if
money follows the student.
Yeah, the money follows the student. So the senator from the 7th is saying, hey, listen, you know, I don't like, and I can't put words into her mouth, but she doesn't like this interim assignment. And you know what? I'm not really arguing for the interim classification that the State Board of Education provided Wellston at that school at that time. But what my issue is that it was a financial decision that the State Board made. It was a financial consideration because of what was going on in that school district. And so she's saying, because of this letter, that it was a way to prohibit the students from going to other school districts. And I'm just trying to figure out, if you're trying to get out of an unaccredited status, then, you know, why would you mind having students go to other places if you took out the financial consideration? So if money did not follow the student, why would that originating school district even care? Why would they care if there was not a financial interest in this? And so, again, my issue is I'm trying to figure out where, and I was just provided something in chapter 161. It says, the State Board of Education shall classify the public schools of the state. subject to limitation provided by law. So I'm trying to find out what those limitations are. And this is 161.092.
Do you know my beliefs in public education in the state?
Tell me.
Is a whole global thinking process, and it never will happen. But coming from St. Louis, and as the senator from the 15th said, we spent a lot of time last week on prevailing wage and how the wage rates in St. Louis are the ones determining an outstate. I'm getting a little tired of my taxpayers only getting 30% of the money they send to Jefferson City back to fund their schools. It's those wage rates of those people that make the money in St. Louis that are subsidizing our public school system throughout the state. So I think once we get public education on this floor, let's have the courage to talk about it in a global issue, about the funding of the schools, about fairly giving school districts money back that their taxpayers pay for, our valuation of property. Let's talk about those issues. We passed a resolution 3 weeks ago, the senator from Lewis, their farm property was increased at the State Board of Taxation 36 or 38% last year. We passed a resolution that told the tax commission, even though you're supposed to be unbiased, that's too high. So they came back this year and passed a resolution to raise their valuation 8%. And the Farm Bureau and the rural state senator said, we need to pass this resolution. Once again, their property has not been increased assessment since 1996. The property my constituents reside in and pay taxes on has been and has increased several times over. So why do us in St. Louis continue to take the burden of taxing ourselves with the local property tax rate and increasing it to fund our schools, and nobody else throughout the state wants to take that assumed responsibility? So we need to start talking about that issue. So I don't get up on the floor too often when we do education because nobody wants to talk about the real situation. The real situation is local responsibility to financially support your school.
Absolutely. And that's what Wellston School District was trying to do in their effort. And they pleaded with the state. It was a state employee, for goodness sakes, that said, we can't afford it anymore. The employee, so let me read this to you. Because this contradicts what the senator from the 7th was saying. And this is 161.192. The State Board of Education shall classify the public schools of the state subject to limitations provided by law, establish requirements for the schools of each class, and formulate rules governing the inspection and accreditation of schools preparatory to classification, with such requirements taken effect not less than 2 years from the date of adoption of the proposed rule by the State Board of Education, provided that this condition shall not apply to any requirement for which a timeline for adoption is mandated in either federal or state law. So there it is right there. The senator from the 7th said it's against the law to assign a special assignment on accreditation. Well, here's the law right here, 161.092, says it right here, the State Board of Education shall deal with inspection and accreditation of schools, deal with the classification of schools. But apparently it's against the law. Well, I'm reading it. This is fact. This is in statute right now. It says that the state board shall deal with the inspection and accreditation of schools. That to me right there says that they were not wrong in making an assignment of interim accreditation. They weren't wrong at all because they have the authority by statute to create a law. It's not illegal. So I'm standing here, Senator, and thank you very much for letting me speak, but I'm standing here because when there is an assertion made on this floor, I want it to be correct, and I want to have references from our statutes, our current statutes.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 7th, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd ask that you send the amendment back.
Madam Secretary, please return the amendment. We are on Senate substitute for Senate Bill 677. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Inquire the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. I know this is an issue that was feel very passionate about and very strong about, and so I appreciate the amendment being pulled back so we can also go on with the bill. But tell us why you wanted to put this amendment forward, and actually you brought this up in committee last week as well.
I did. Actually, as I read the document from DESE, I think it's really clear what was happening. And students have a right to transfer. And inventing, if you will, this different accreditation that had never been utilized before was a way to circumvent the law. And whether they have the right to do that now or not is really not the issue. The issue is, should they have the right to do this? And so, Senator, I really appreciate you working with me on this. I know we discussed this before we came on the floor today. And this is a message that DESE needs to hear very strongly. And the senator from the 15th brought it up. This bypassing of the legislature by the administrative departments is wrong. It needs to stop. And when you put anything in to circumvent the law, when you give any advice to districts of how to get around the clear and unambiguous language of the law, and clear and unambiguous was what the Missouri Supreme Court used. So when you try to circumvent that, it should not be done. And that's why I thought this was an amendment that really improved your Senate bill to make sure that they did comply with the law and they didn't circumvent it. So, you know, it could be that different people have different understandings on this, and I'm willing to give that to the senator from St. Louis. I can't remember what number. But the point is, going forward, they should not be allowed to circumvent the law and take away the rights of children as put forth in the law and as verified by the Supreme Court.
I think in committee it was brought up that it's probably in statute, but you wanted to just show, you just wanted to be on the shadow of a doubt, correct? That,
right.
That what should or should not be done when it comes to the
correct
different classifications of accreditation.
Correct.
And I
correct
think also that you were wanted to have even amendment to your amendment that would have made sure for the areas of accreditive distinction that that would
right
be included as well.
And that
obviously
was
that's
one
a very important.
Right. Accredited with distinction, I failed to put that in my amendment, and someone pointed that out, and I had an amendment to the amendment to make sure that those districts who are serving with distinction, that that's recognized too, to make sure that that was in there. So I'm very disappointed not to get this amendment on, because I think that it does clarify the law of where it needs to be clarified, but I also realize how important it is to you to get 677 through. Is it 667 or 677?
677.
677
right
through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I honor that, and I am not going to stand here and hold up your progress, because we can allow filibusters in this room. But I do feel like it's a very, very important portion, and I guess what I hope is that even if we don't get that in the law, that I am hoping that DESE will abide by it.
Do you think that DESE has heard what you've said?
I certainly hope so. I think it's important maybe for them to continue to hear it from other people, too. And I appreciate the senator from the 15th and his sort of underscoring of that and emphasizing that. And I appreciate your work with me on this. And I think it is important that we make sure that they implement the law, not make the law.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Inquire the senator from the 15th.
Senator from the 15th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. And one of the unique things and good things, I think, of the Senate is, even though it may not be specifically on this bill, I think when we tangentially touch upon other items that we haven't had an opportunity to speak on, I think it's important to raise the General Assembly's awareness, much like you did with the senator from the 7th. And I happen to concur with you. We may come about it in a different way. It oftentimes doesn't matter how you get to the end of Candy Lane. You can either go chutes or ladders. But as long as you get to the finish line, I think that's what's important in all of our rationale and how we reach that effect. One of the things I wanted to explore with your dialogue with the senator from the 7th, not so much about what DESE may do, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. I thought that was the case during the supplemental. I don't know if the case was as strong during the supplemental because the new formula hadn't been fully phased in yet. But now that the new formula is fully phased in, I think the only way is to move the SAT, the student adequacy target, which will have ramifications to outstate legislators, by and large, more so than, say, the urban areas or the I-70 corridor. And I think it's important that all of the legislators understand that, because there's also another way to go about this that isn't about how do we spread the fact that we don't fully fund the foundation formula, how do we pass that expense off on all the school districts. The other avenue we can do is we can just simply fund the formula.
Yeah.
I don't, and I haven't heard anyone, and I want to, as an outstate guy, talk to my more urban brethren, but I haven't heard anyone really complaining of the formula if we would have fully funded the formula.
I wasn't here in 2005.
Right.
If I had anything to do with it, you know, it's interesting. It wouldn't look like what it looks like now. I'm just one senator.
Right.
But what was a seminal moment for me, and what was very instructive, you know, I came in. The formula is a very complicated tool, and in many ways, you have a way of devising how to redistribute. I mean, it's the largest redistribution of wealth we do every single year, whether it's fully phased in or not. It is money comes to Jeff City, and it is redistributed throughout the state.
Let's be honest, that's how we do everything. Medicaid the same way,
right.
Highways the same way,
absolutely.
Hospitals, nursing homes, everything.
Making the point that it's
tax credits.
Yeah, it's the largest, and by way of GR, certainly the largest. But it was interesting. You know, you run for office, you have certain priorities, you have things you want to do, but there are always, and I'm sure there are things in your longer legislative career, as you find more out about it, you dig a little bit deeper, and you're wondering what in the world were people thinking. You know, I look back in 1993 was a very interesting year. They had a foundation formula. The language that the senator from the 7th is trying to deal with as far as the unaccredited, that was in a bill in 1993. There's a lot going on in 1993, but when...
A lot of people got jobs.
What's that?
A lot of people got jobs after Senate Bill 380 got passed.
Yeah, I've learned about that, too.
One of those jobs is now front and center with an organization that was created secondary to 1983, with workers' compensation.
I find that fascinating. You know, we got this government-created competitor in an insurance market that's pretty healthy now, but we can't let go. You know, we can't let go.
Yeah.
But when the former senator from Buchanan, Senator Shields, he had this crazy super hold harmless provision, if you recall, and I think it was Senate Bill 290. It was an omnibus education
287.
Bill. And it was a moment where I was sort of shaken into the reality of how this really, really works. You know, how the formula works. And I understand that in order to get things passed, that
But that ultimately didn't.
It didn't become
the reality. So, I mean, I think because there were many of us that joined together at that juncture.
Oh, I'll give you credit.
Yeah.
You were one of the few that I think looked at it objectively.
Right.
Instead of, you know, driving down the street just picking the biggest house to break into.
Right.
You know, and that's how I
choose. Yeah, and I mean, that's where we went. And I understand that Senator Shields came up. I mean, he came up with a lot of crazy ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, over the course of
the year.
And
I look back, you know what? It was pretty clever.
As I have too. But, you know, there was another provision in the formula that, thank God, didn't become law that basically said because St. Joe had older buildings than any other school district in the state, all of a sudden they qualified for a construction enhancement within the foundation formula as well that we were able to get rid of. There were a lot of things in that bill. But ultimately, we did get a formula that passed. it went through the dynamics of where we were. The whole idea is that we were going to make the commitment as the General Assembly, as I was here, to fully fund that formula. And I think many of what people are talking about relative to the foundation formula fix, I know it has nothing to do with Turner, but the foundation formula fix could be solved if we just fully funded the foundation.
Yeah, but that raises an interesting issue. I'd be interested to hear your perspective. Looking back, okay, and I have the benefit of being the mm-hmm. you know, the armchair quarterback here, how in the world people projected the kind of growth and the kind of spending that would happen that has, like, you could make an argument that it was based on a number that people could go back home and sell and say, look at all this money I'm going to bring now from the state to your school district. And
well, actually, it was a reduction from the old formula.
Of the old, yeah.
Of the old formula.
No.
So to say that we didn't take that into account, I mean, basically, what we had was an old formula. We came nowhere close to funding. It was still projected to increase in funding, but had some triggers that could change, namely the state adequacy target,
right,
as we could go forward to, you know, a proration factor was in the old formula, but that's nothing more to reverse engineer distribution according to what is ultimately appropriated where it is. This formula was supposed to be designed to be a little different. I don't know so much about the projections as to, from the time we found it, funded that formula, where we have appropriated other monies. And I'm going to get into this with the senator from Howell in a little bit, and I know you and I may disagree a little bit on these things from time to time, although we're able to reach agreement, and we did this special session,
right,
and able to get something out of this body, so I don't want to belabor it. But I think for the benefit of the House that ironically is passing another tax credit and then adjourn, the angel investor tax credit, which the chief advocate was a lawyer that sat down and in the opening remarks said, listen, these investments are so risky, we can only afford to spend taxpayer money.
Right.
So that's why you need to approve this, because no one that spends their own money is ever going to spend their own money on these type of ventures. So ergo, give us taxpayer dollars. And the House has continued to pass all of these tax credits. Many of the rural legislators, and I think it's important, that continue to support those tax credits, because there were only 11 members, as I understand it, that voted no on that angel tax credit. Many of those rural legislators, their largest employer, Senator, who do you think their largest employer?
School districts.
School districts. School districts back home. So it makes no sense to me whatsoever for someone to say, and I apologize, that the purpose of me passing these tax credits is for economic development, when we know for a fact that what's going on is we're taking money that used to go to schools and we're reappropriating it outside of the appropriations process through the expenditure of tax credits. And then we come back and we say to education, my gosh, I'm sorry, there's just not enough money. We can't fund you. And let alone talking about the foundation formula that brings urban-rural issues together, let's talk about the transportation line item that pays for busing that is a bigger problem that has been decimated by this administration through withholds, not so much the foundation.
It does, formula. But you know what? You may see a regional divide on that. I actually, you know, the largest, as I've looked at the numbers, special school district in St. Louis County is tremendously affected by that. So it's not
good.
It's not simply, you know, because you have to bus greater distances. There are different circumstances, particularly in St. Louis County, with the special school district that has had a tremendous health impact from that.
And the key is, because we look politically at this, and no one wants to say they cut education funding, if you eliminate the transportation line item, you've still got to pay for the buses. You can't not bus students, so it comes out of the classroom. No,
but what's interesting, yeah, but the dynamic, unfortunately, in my neck of the woods is, even if we were fully funding the education formula, Kirkwood doesn't get any more money.
No, so, I understand.
As much as I agree that education is one of those decision items, particularly when you combine K-12 and higher ed, amounts to almost 45% of the GR revenue that we spend. Should we be doing better? Absolutely. But you know, another conversation we don't really have is it just really a dollar amount? So,
I completely can't.
You and I are a mess here. You're coughing. I'm losing the mic.
Yeah, I know. It's
if somebody's listening on the internet, this has to be really painful to five people who are listening. But no.
It's important. It's important, and that's why I want to, because, you know, until now, we haven't had an opportunity in the Senate to really talk about what's going on in the state.
Because they're all connected.
In what needs to be addressed by its public policymakers. And many of the issues that the senator from the 7th is talking about, I think we're to the point where we need to address them prospectively in the budget through eliminating DESE and would be supportive of that line. But all of this ties in to where people need to have that understanding. You know, I'm almost to the point we may be better off without DESE than we are with DESE on many of these issues. And former superintendents that, when they were in the districts, did what the big man wanted and now have been reported with a second retirement. And with the senator from the 7th, this is no different than when PSRS used to advise administrators how to get around retirement laws and double dip on their retirement and how they did. And we had to address that on this issue. So there are many, many issues that we can build that I wish we were spending time.
I agree. And here's why that's important. If you remember, and it's a bill that's second on the formal calendar. Last year, we spent a couple hours on the floor. And I don't think, regardless of what some people might think, I don't believe every incentive is good. I don't think every incentive is bad. I think they ought to be looked at on their own merit. And I think you, by and large, working with you these 4 years, I think you feel the same way.
Voted for the same bill during special session.
Right. And we had time to work through that bill. I think that bill got better. Now, is it passed by itself? I don't know. Okay. But that bill got better. And as we talk about these issues now for the first time with regard to education, I think the more people are out here on the floor talking, instead of these, you know, cloistered, whether it's individually in our offices or even in a caucus where I think you sacrifice a lot of independent thought with the group, to be out here to have the discussions, I think we can find a way home on some of this stuff. And education is one of the ones we got to do it. It's not fair to Kirkwood for them not to have any ability to determine number of slots. It's also not fair to the kids in St. Louis Public who deserve some level of reform so that they have the best chance to receive a good education. And you know what? It's not just about money, because we spend $16,000 per pupil in St. Louis City. So if money was the answer, we'd have solved the problem. And it's not.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, I've heard statistics, and I don't. I think I've heard it from the senator from the first. But we are alarmingly getting close to where you have a better likelihood as an African-American male of getting a GED from Missouri Correctional Centers than from graduating high school.
Well, let me give you
and
another.
That's a shame on us.
Yeah,
and that's a blemish on rural legislators, urban legislators. That is a deep staining stigma and shame that all of us should want to address.
Right, and just as, you know, we have our parochial hats on a lot of times because we represent our districts, but we're all state senators, and there's certain things, just like there are certain issues in rural Missouri that ought to be important to me, even though I represent a suburban area, and issues in the urban core and in suburbia right. that you ought to be interested in. The most startling statistic I think I've ever heard, and we had a forum back in Kirkwood and Webster this weekend, that I've ever heard, and you hear a lot of them, is that when you have 85% of the African-American kids right now being born out of wedlock in St. Louis City, less than half graduating from high school. If you combine those two statistics, you combine both of them, you have a 9 out of 10 chance of spending the rest of your life in poverty. That is unacceptable. And that is a generation of kids that don't have opportunities. And if we talk about Missouri being an attractive place for people to do business or to find people to work in their company, you can't have that. And we got to do something different. And I'm not saying I'm the almighty emperor that knows all, but we got to have the discussion. We got to figure out what that is. We got to course correct.
Yeah. And I'm with you. That's where I think a Senate plays a critical role. That's where I would like to see us go, even if it's without a bill. And it's just us taking some pro forma sessions to say, hey, this is a big issue. Let's talk about this as we go forward, particularly anticipation of the budget coming forward and many of the public policy decisions that have to be there. I, you know, as I look over the bills that we've passed so far in session, I'm not that impressed. I don't feel like, hoorah, we're leaving this place a little bit better than we found it. We're dealing with the big challenges that are moving forward as a state. So, as I continue to cough, I just wanted to say I appreciate you raising that and want to participate in that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator from the first, what
purpose
do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I inquire the Senator from Johnson?
Senator from Johnson, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. Senator, if I could just direct you to page 8 of your substitute.
Mm-hmm.
Section 8, or number 8. Line 19. What's the purpose of that language?
This was language that was added by the senator from the 7th on this bill, and I also believe Representative Lair, he had House Bill 1174, which basically said this will not supersede the Clayton versus Turner decision.
So this has to do with the Turner decision.
So this would not be perceived as a Turner fix, I believe. That's why it was put on there.
Okay. All right. Was that a condition of the bill getting out of committee?
It was pretty important for the bill to get passed.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the first.
Could I inquire the Senator from the 7th?
Senator from the 7th, you yield.
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Senator, for yielding. So this language would, if I have an amendment to put my Turner fix on this bill, then this language would
conflict with it.
Conflict with that, confuse that.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it that this bill, would this bill have got out of committee if it didn't have this language in it?
I can't speculate on that.
You really don't know.
I don't
the votes?
Know. I think it was an important clarification to the point when we did bring it up, the House made the same correction on their own.
All right. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. Mr. President.
Senator from the first.
I have an amendment.
Send the amendment forward.
It has not been distributed. I ask that it be read. And I ask for a waiver. I ask that it be read.
Madam Secretary, read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Lemke, to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 677, page 8, sections 16.2.081, lines 19 through 24, by striking all of said lines.
Senator, would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment would do is simply take out the language that's in the current substitute, lines 19 through 24. I'd move for its adoption.
Thank you, Senator. The Senator from the First has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 677. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Johnson.
Mr. President, I move for a point of order.
State your point of order.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would ask that this amendment be ruled out of order for a couple of reasons. When we look at the titling, the title of it is fairly tight relating to school accreditation. We open up sections 162.081 and 162.081.5, and this amendment, although I...
Or you need to take the bill out.
I'm sorry. I will withdraw my point of order. Thank you.
Point of order has been withdrawn.
I'm sorry.
Senator from the Seventh.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the First.
Senator from the First, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
You know what just happened on my amendment?
On what amendment?
The one that I tried to put on a little bit ago.
Uh-huh. I was in and out of the chamber.
Oh, okay.
What happened?
Well,
what
happened is I had to withdraw my amendment in deference to the senator who is the sponsor of 677 to allow it to move forward. And you probably know how strongly I feel about this issue. Your amendment does pretty much the same thing as your bill last session that could not make it out of education. And this amendment does the same thing. It has not come for a vote in education. We probably both know why, because it probably can't pass that or any other committee.
Are we talking about the amendment we're currently on?
Well, let me see it. Which amendment are we on? I thought it was the one that was your bill before the committee.
Oh, my Lord. My amendment
why don't you read me what amendment you're on?
My amendment currently, Senator, takes out lines, page 8, lines 8 through, or lines 19 through 24.
Is this, the amendment I've got on my desk is O2S?
No, I haven't offered that amendment.
Oh, well, obviously that's my language, so I think you can't take that out. I mean, that's really important to this bill because we have a law right now. That law was put in place in 1993 as part of the Outstanding Schools Act. At that time, as you'll recall, well, maybe you don't recall. I remember my husband was president of the State Board of Education, and he worked with then-Governor Mel Carnahan. They worked very hard on this Outstanding Schools Act because it was the largest tax increase in the history of this state, and it all went to education. And as a result of that money, I remember in 1993, my husband said to me, if all this influx of money does not dramatically improve achievement, we have to start all over again and redraw education, and it needs to be scrapped with what we're doing and have a whole new plan. And so what happened was, as you've seen from charts that I have passed out, there's a line of the money, and it kept going up. And there's a line of the achievement in math and English, and it is absolutely flat. So basically, all that money, we've gotten nothing from it. The only accountability that, frankly, there was no opposition to in 1993 was that if you got stuck residing in an unaccredited district, that you could have the opportunity to choose an accredited district in the same or an adjoining county. Now, that has been the law for almost two decades now. There has been no opposition to that law. Now, as we pass the Senator from Johnson's bill with regard to giving DESE more responsibility, which I'm a little concerned about because of what I said earlier on the floor, that they have not utilized that responsibility in a way that the law states. They've circumvented it. But as we do that, this could be construed as ignoring 167.131. It could be construed as going around that. So, Senator, that's critical. I mean, the House, the thing is, if this bill gets to the House, that amendment's going to get back on because the House already agreed with that and said we have to make really clear that we don't imply that we're going to take kids' rights away that have been in the law since 1993. So, can't let you do that.
Well, I mean, if it's already in the law, then why do you need it here?
Because the bill itself and the way it's worded could be construed to go around the law and to actually, yeah, it could be construed to go around the law. And right. I don't think anybody
knows that. But Senator, I know that you understand this. We don't agree on this issue as far as that continuing to be the law. I want to change the law.
Oh, I would too.
I want to change the law to protect the progress that's happened in the city of St. Louis and to protect all of my school districts that have great uncertainty that are the border school districts to the city of St. Louis. So that's the purpose of my Turner fix, and that's the reason that I want to get it on this bill.
Oh, okay. Well, I've worked really hard on a Turner fix, as you know, and it would allow all of your school districts. Hold on just a minute. The plan that I have come forward with addresses all the concerns of your districts and all of us. It says, and I'm going to go through this because a lot of people don't understand what a good deal it is, and I've been on a local school board in St. Louis County, and I know what a good deal is. What it says is districts that are eligible to receive these students from the unaccredited districts, you can decide how many seats you have available that you can serve. There is going to be no Big Brother monitoring. There is going to be no dictation of class size. You can set your class size any way you want. Nobody's going to come in and count the number of seats that are available. You can take zero kids. You can take 100 kids. You can take 1,000 kids. But nobody's going to look over your shoulder and make you do anything. It is totally a local board decision. Totally. But we still have these children in the unaccredited districts that we are responsible for under the Constitution to give a quality accredited education.
Right.
Now, if the public providers choose not to provide that, and I would allow them the option of choosing not to.
What if they choose to?
Well, then that's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Well, what is the problem that you have with the solution that I have in
well,
my
let
bill.
Let me finish my solution.
Okay.
So if the public providers refuse to provide service, then the only place you have to go is private providers. Now, we've heard testimony from those in the city who are willing to take the kids, want to take the kids, who have served this community for 200 years in education, run circles around the statistics of the city districts. For instance, we found out, as you'll remember in the discussion last year on a bill you had, we found out that the ACT in St. Louis City average is 15. The parochial schools, the average is 20 plus. The average in Kansas City is almost 25 on the ACT, the average. And where about half the kids are graduating and half of that are going to college, like 25%, in the city of St. Louis, these schools are graduating 90 to 100%. Those are getting through college. And so they're getting a really good education. But the most amazing thing is they're doing it for less than half the price. Less than half the price, and they're willing to keep doing that. And they're in the community. The kids don't even need to leave their community. I do not want to abandon Kansas City and St. Louis. I want families to be able to stay there. And this allows stability in those communities for students to have a right to choose that, as well as still go out into the counties if they want to. But the reason that I have a problem with your fix is it has been 18 years since the city of St. Louis public schools have been fully accredited. 18 years. And what do we hear when people come forward? Well, we're making progress. We just need a little more time, a little more money. $16,000 per student. $16,000. When those who are running circles around them statistically can do it for less than half. And they've proven it because they've been doing it for 200 years.
So just a couple of questions, Senator, on your fix. Is there a bill moving with that provision in it?
If what?
Is there a bill currently moving in either the House or the Senate with that provision in it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And what bill is that?
706, 431, and I think it's...
And where are they? Where are they in the process?
The House bill has passed rules, and it is on the formal calendar in the House. 431, I think, is on the formal calendar here. Not certain on that.
So it's passed out of education?
It passed out of general laws.
Out of general laws, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, then, and passed out of education
and then
on the House side.
Has there been an SJR or an HJR to repeal the Blaine Amendment?
I think that there have been introduction of those bills. I can't tell you the numbers. I don't know.
Would it be a little premature to rest our hope as far as a fix on sending kids to parochial schools until we repeal the Blaine Amendment?
You don't need to for this. It's a tax credit.
It's a tax credit.
Yes. So that says.
Have we checked with the senator from Jane?
We have discussed it. Okay. This one, though, is interesting. This one saves $30 million, not on the IFCOM, but $30 million immediately. That $30 million, and I'll explain how it happens because some people can't figure out how this happens. If you have a student in the city of St. Louis, as I said, $16,000 per student. If that child chooses a parochial school or any non-public school for that matter, any of them, it would work the same way. The average tuition for a scholarship can be met with a tax credit of $4,800. So, let's just say you're a donor. You give $8,000 so a child can go to this non-public school that's accredited. And then the state gives you $4,800 for your $8,000. Great deal for the state. So we just paid $4,800 for that child to go to one of these quality accredited schools. And so we've saved $11,000 to $12,000. Instead of paying $16,000 for that child, we're now just paying $4,800 for that child. And the $11,000 to $12,000 that we just saved gets divided between the city district and the state. So the state makes money. We make $30 million, according to the official fiscal note. But what we didn't see was the city of St. Louis makes money on that child that they can then reinvest in the other children they have left and improve the education, hopefully, for those children. So it's a win-win for everybody. The public schools get more money. And in every area of the country that has done this, the public schools get better when they have to face competition. When they're exposed to competition, the more they're exposed to it, the better they get and the faster they get. And it's actually resulted in students coming back to those failing districts because they're getting better when they have to face competition. So I guess, Senator, when I look at the district and what you're trying to do is take away those kids' rights.
What about the idea that 60 of the 65 buildings in the city of St. Louis are actually accredited buildings? They're actually meeting the performance standards that DESE puts out. So what my idea is, if the seats are available, then let those children stay in their communities and go to, you know, accredited buildings within the district. Senator, you and I are not going to agree on this issue, but I think there's one thing we can agree on. It's very difficult to pass a bill out of the Missouri Senate. Would you agree with that?
That it is, and I think this bill is going to be a lot more difficult if this amendment gets on it.
Right.
I guess I'm asking you the favor that I just did for the senator from Johnson. I withdrew an amendment that I felt very strongly about, and I stood and debated on it for a while, but I didn't feel like that it needed to go on and on and on, and in deference to him, I withdrew that amendment. But if this amendment gets on, or your other amendment gets on, I guess I would ask you to withdraw it, because I do not want to stand and filibuster the senator from Johnson's bill. So I'm asking you for the same deference that I just gave him on his bill, because I will. If this gets on, I will be forced to, because this is everything I have lived and breathed for 12 years.
I know, Senator, and I know that we don't agree on this issue. You have a different idea of what we can get out of this body, okay? And ultimately, I think that we've got a lot of political subdivisions, school districts in great jeopardy because of a court decision. Okay.
They're not if we put the fix in that I just described to you.
I know, Senator, but that fix is not going to make it through this body. It's just not.
It hasn't had a chance. I think it may.
No.
You're not as hopeful as I am, but I think when we have a real discussion of it, and you know, the other part I didn't say was the Kansas City portion of it, and I think the surrounding superintendents, the suburban superintendents in Kansas City, are rock stars for coming up with a way to be part of the solution. And that's part of it, too. We haven't even had a full debate on the thing. But people have worked very hard to try to provide some guidelines that will answer all the concerns that people have, but still give an accredited quality education to every child in this state. I don't know if you saw the Wall Street Journal last week, but there's an article in there, and it was by the Council on Foreign Relations. And they're typically a pretty liberal group, but they have looked at education, and particularly urban education, but all education, but urban is a sore spot, as we all know. And they have said our national security, our economic security in the world is now at risk. And so, Senator, we can't keep sending them back, because I know I'm getting to your other amendment or some of your other proposals, but the City of St. Louis Public Schools has not met one academic requirement. That means reading, math, science. They haven't even gotten to the lowest basic acceptable level. And that's why we're here. It's for kids to learn, for them to come up with skills. And you heard in a committee hearing of mine in the City of St. Louis that the Army recruiter in that area stood up and told us that 23% of the kids who want to get into the military can't even qualify because they can't pass the entrance exam. And I can understand why this council says it's now a national security risk. I've been forever saying it's an economic security risk. But then they told us the story, as you'll recall, of that valedictorian who was graduating from one of the schools in the St. Louis Public Schools, valedictorian, and the Army recruiter was so proud of her and went to her graduation ceremony. And then the girl was going to come take the entrance exam for the military. She had to score at least a 30 to even have the very basics. She wouldn't even have all the jobs available to her. She really needed a 50 to be able to have all the jobs that the military allowed. But a 30 would at least get her in as a cook or something like that. And Senator, do you
remember? I was there. I remember.
Do you remember what she scored? Valedictorian. Do you remember what she scored?
It was in the teens, wasn't it?
No. It was four.
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 Okay. Now, Senator, let me jump in here, Senator.
We can't relegate them to
I know we have to do something different, and you and I agree there. Okay? We agree we have to do something different. This isn't about letting the City of St. Louis off the hook. There's more to the equation than just that entity. I'm concerned about all those entities that I'm responsible to also,
and
their senator.
Will you support me on my fix? Will you? I mean, I know I'm not supposed to ask you that. Excuse me. Do you think the fix I have that will let them have totally local control?
Hey, I like your ideas. I'm just looking around at our colleagues that I see in this chamber, and I don't think that they're going to let that bill out.
Well,
I mean,
this bill's not going to get out either if this amendment gets on it. So,
right.
I mean, I'm just being up front with you.
Well, I understand. I'm going to inquire the senator from Johnson. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the first.
Can I inquire the senator from Johnson?
Senator from Johnson, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator.
Yes.
And I know that when and if I offer this amendment, you're going to challenge that amendment as far as it being germane to the bill or whatever the
right.
point of order is. Would you be willing to lay this bill over so that we could have some discussion with Senator from the 7th, others that may be interested in this as far as, you know, how we might progress?
How long are you talking about? I mean, if we can, like, work on tonight and in the morning and come back to it the next day or so.
I'm saying if there's anything that we could, you know, work out, you know, this evening, mm-hmm. you know, if it's okay with the floor leader and the idea that you'd come back to it. But from the position that I'm at right now with the amendment that I've offered,
right.
I mean, I really don't want to ask for that amendment back until I've had a little discussion.
Oh, I would certainly be willing to do that.
Thank you, Senator.
I would be willing to do that. So,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. President.
Senator from Johnson.
I ask that this bill be laid over on the informal calendar.
The bill shall be laid over on the informal calendar with the amendment pending. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I request the Senate to stand at ease.
Seeing no objection, the Senate shall stand at ease. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. We'll stay on that calendar. Ask you to go back to the Senator from Johnson on Senate Bill 677.
The Senate will come to order. Senator from Johnson, Senate Bill 677.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe before we were at ease, I asked that the bill be placed on the informal calendar. So now I am moving to take the bill up off the informal calendar for consideration. Can I move that?
You've heard the Senator from Johnson. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Johnson. Senator from the 1st, I'm sorry, you have the pending amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. You send my amendment back.
Madam Secretary, please return the amendment. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We are on Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 677. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Johnson?
No, thank you at this time, Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th.
Yes, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, thank you for allowing me to inquire of you. I wasn't part of the earlier discussions and was on, just heard a little bit in the final discussions. And I just wanted to know if you mind why you sent your amendment back.
Well, after much discussion, I realized that the senator from the 7th was very passionate about that language that was in the bill and about my amendment that would have followed my first amendment. And I know that the senator from Johnson is very anxious to get this piece of legislation through the Senate. So after much discussion, made the decision that it might be a better avenue to hopefully get my bill, my Turner fix, out of the Education Committee and hopefully get that to the floor so that we can have some debate on that bill.
Did you get any assurances on that? Because I know that this Turner issue, you know, I'm very passionate about it too, and I know that you have been extraordinarily passionate about it. In fact, I was looking at one of your other amendments, and there's a part of this amendment that you haven't offered yet that I am really supportive of, and that's Section 4. And it's an idea that I think I complimented you on it on a couple weeks ago when you presented this as a bill in the Education Committee. But I think in the conversations you had was part one. I actually want to commend you for catching that language because I did not catch it, and I'm opposed to it. So we still have a problem.
Okay.
We still have a problem in here because I don't like that language. And, you know, I'll just have to do whatever I have to do. But, you know, I appreciate you offering the amendment. I'm saddened that you withdrew it, but now I have an issue. So, and I would have completely supported your amendment, and I was hoping to speak on behalf of your amendment, even. And I think it's important. I don't, you know, I wish that had not gotten involved or gotten put into this bill, and specifically because this bill may not pass now. You know,
well, you know, Senator, I mentioned it to the senator from the 7th that the Missouri Senate is a very difficult place to pass a piece of legislation.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it really comes down to the prerogative of any senator if they have a problem with a bill. And that's why, I mean, we stood at ease and we tried to get together and see if we could talk through it. But I guess, you know, my position is that I really respect the ability of any senator to stand up on this floor and talk forever, you know, if they have a problem with a piece of legislation. That is your right, that's my right, the right from the senator from the 7th. All 34 senators have that ability. And if we have a problem with language within a bill, then the process of the Senate is, you know, to either respectfully work through that or send the bill to the graveyard, right?
I think we have to continue talking about it. The reason why, let me step backwards. Last year, when you spoke on the floor about issues that you really care about, you know, that was when my eyes were really opened about we come here because we're passionate about something, whether the rest of us agree or not. You know, we stand on what we believe in, what's in our gut and what's in our spirit and what our constituents like and want. And you did that very eloquently. I disagreed on that specific issue.
Sure.
But you did it in such a fine way that it demanded my respect of you. Absolutely. Because now I know not to you know, be silent. That's why I like being on the floor so much, because I don't know what's coming up. You know, anything could happen at any given time. And I know that I am passionate about a lot of stuff. And I know that this language here would be a detriment. And I wish it was in another bill that we could debate on its own merit. And I know that there are other senators who care about other language in this bill. And I think you're right, as you said, that each of us has a prerogative to do what we may. And, you know, I'm going to
Well, Senator, we all have to pick our battles, and I've got plenty of battles in front of me. Even though I don't like the language as it currently is from the senator from the 7th in this bill, Senator from Johnson, it's not, you know, one that I necessarily want to fall on my sword on. So I don't want to filibuster this bill. I do have a concern about the language. I do have a concern about us fixing Turner, and I do have a concern that, again, it's a very difficult place to pass a piece of legislation. So you have to measure all those things and say, what are we going to be able to get done so that we can protect the progress that is happening in St. Louis City, and we can protect all the school districts that border St. Louis City or any unaccredited school district, you know, because, again, they need some certainty. I mean, if there's one thing these school districts haven't had is certainty, because we haven't kept our promises. We haven't fulfilled our responsibility, as the senator from the 15th was talking about earlier, in that we write a new formula and then we don't fund the darn thing, right? So, I mean, if nothing else, I'm trying to get these districts a little bit of certainty as far as what they can expect. So that's my goal.
That's what you
Nothing mean. Beyond that. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to stand up and stop the senator from Johnson's bill.
I understand that.
But that could be your problem, you know. So.
Yeah, there's one question that I have,
yes.
And maybe it's a procedural issue. So we vote on this bill. It goes to the House. The House possibly makes changes. We go to a conference. We settle the differences, and then we have third reading. We have the final vote over here.
We would have a final vote in the conference committee report, right?
And at that time, which will probably... let's say best case scenario for the people who want to pass the bill, maybe next week or 2 weeks from now. Actually, it has to go through the entire process. So 3 weeks. So we're talking 3 weeks from now, and then there are 4 weeks left in session, and we also are dealing with budget. So I can either talk now or talk in 4 weeks. And I think the value of me talking for a long time and 4 weeks is much, much higher than me talking now. And no matter...
At that point, Senator, time will be on your side.
Time would be completely on my side. So we can either start now or we can wait in 3 weeks. And there are a lot of things that may not pass in 3 or 4 weeks. And we have the budget.
Right.
You know, one of the key issues that I've been supporting is having a moratorium on these tax credits. I want a moratorium on the issuance and authorization on that. You know, I don't want that bill to be held up. I don't want it to be held up. But I do reserve the right to talk about this bill in full for however long I want later on.
Good.
And I'll do it.
Okay.
You know, I'll do it. Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 15th.
Senator from the 15th.
Thank you.
Sergeant of Arms. Senator from the 15th, the Senator from the 14th has asked for an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I definitely can't look around at you. But I know that you're also passionate about this issue, and I'm wondering, you know, where you're at in allowing this to move forward.
Yeah, I'm still rattling this around in my head because on one hand, I agree with the senator from the 7th in that I don't want DESE or the State Board of Education to direct or consult districts to figure out ways around what the law is. My question is, I don't know if we really know what the law is right now, because the case has not been finally adjudicated. So it is. Here's the scenario that I'm... So on one hand, I don't know if this does anything. On the other hand, it's possible I could run a hypothetical that you'd give to a law student in a law exam that says, okay, let's say the Supreme Court has remanded this case back to circuit court. Let's say the circuit court comes up with a decision that comports with the original ruling of the Supreme Court. That will most certainly be appealed, ultimately, to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court could, with a different composition now than it had originally when the Turner decision was handed down in 2010, reverse its own decision. Now, is that likely? Probably not. I think the law, for whatever reason, the reason it was enacted in 93, I think is pretty clear, unfortunately, is pretty clear, in that it doesn't give any control to the receiving districts as to the number of slots. So the question then we have to answer right now is this law a directive to the board to not mess around with anything while this is really being considered? Or if the Supreme Court reverses itself, and I hate to even bring this up because it may give, although maybe people have their own ideas right now anyway, if the Supreme Court reverses the decision and we pass this, does this then give fuel to another lawsuit that says the legislature in 2012 spoke very clearly that you have a right to transfer? And that's sort of what I'm dealing with. I'm trying to be respectful of the senator from 7th stated intention. I'm trying to be respectful of the senator from Johnson's desire to pass this bill out. But I also am trying to look at this critically because I represent districts that could be affected by this. And so do you.
Absolutely. So let's walk through this. I was only in pre-law. You actually went to law school. So let's walk through this. So for my edification.
Well, you have the benefit of not having the debt, I promise.
So let's, you have a Supreme Court who is trying to make a decision.
Well, the Supreme Court decided... Okay.
They made a decision.
In 2010, they made a decision. They said, we believe the law says if you live in an unaccredited district, you have the ability to transfer to a district in an adjoining county that is accredited. Okay? So they said that, but they remanded it back to the lower court for an evidentiary hearing and a trial.
Which they've done.
Which has not happened yet, or it has not been concluded yet.
Yeah,
Judge Vincent in St. Louis County.
That was about 3 weeks ago, right?
Well, I don't think it's been decided.
It hasn't been decided, but they held the meeting about 3 weeks ago.
Right. So I don't know what that decision or order looks like from the court. I also can probably, as close as you can say, guarantee that one way or another, that decision will... be appealed.
Now, I don't know if you were listening to NPR this morning, but I certainly was, and they were discussing this very issue this morning. And they are waiting, I guess, the NPR folks and their audience, including myself, they're waiting for an outcome as soon as possible. And it does seem like we're jumping the gun if we go ahead and allow this particular language to move forward. And in that sense, I would agree with you.
Yeah, because I want the outcome to be the outcome. I don't want this paragraph to affect the outcome of the court case.
So we end up having another lawsuit because then you have the judicial branch being in conflict with the legislative branch, and certainly there'll be people from whichever side to sue, which means that our attorney general could perhaps end up in court and we're spending tax dollars.
Again, and here's what I would say if I was placing bets. The odds are that this language
I hope we're not placing bets on legislation.
I'm not.
I really hope
not. I'm not.
I know you're not, but I hope those that are seeking to pass this language aren't playing in a betting game.
No, and you know what about this thing? This is a very complicated issue that is going to require time to figure these issues out, and this is just one facet that, quite frankly, I didn't really see or notice until today.
And that's why I was thanking the senator from the first, because
right.
I sit on the committee and missed this.
Yeah, and I don't, so I think it's likely that this merely affirms probably what's coming, but that isn't a certainty. I mean, there could be another, like I said, the most likely reason it would be different is that there's a different member on the Supreme Court. I have no idea how Judge Draper would rule on this.
So the second part of this language on page 8 would definitely reaffirm what is already law. The first part of it, I don't know if it agrees to current law.
Well, I think, well, and this
the
is
second
where...
part of it, starting at line 22, certainly would reaffirm what's in law, but the first part.
Well, yeah, and here, and this is where the senator from the 7th and I and the senator from the 1st, and we're all kind of talking about this. If the intention is to say the state board can't, you know, cheat, okay, they gotta play it straight here, I agree. But the language, I think, is a little unclear as to say that the no action, and here's what it says, no action of the state board of education pursuant to this section shall be construed to supersede the right of a student residing in an unaccredited district. Okay, in layman's terms, state board, you can't tell districts that the law says you don't have to accept them, okay, under Section 167, to transfer to an accredited district in the same adjoining county and has different tuition paid. So if that's all we're doing, like in the interim until the decision is rendered final, you got me. I'm sold. If this is to say that we're affirming the law as it's not fully adjudicated and there could be something different, that's what concerns me a little bit. And
exactly. You're exactly right. That concerns me as well, because then there's an automatic conflict.
Right. So what I was suggesting, and I don't know how to get there yet because we were talking to researchers, is to say that, well, what if you froze in time? You said, State Board of Education, you have to abide by the rules and the law as it was in July of 2010 when the Turner decision was decided. I think that might solve the problem. Now, I don't know if the Senator Seven sees it that way, but I think we were on the same page with it, and I know this was important language, but I don't want it to do something that takes us on a path that nobody really thought we were headed down.
So, is there a way that we can make this contingent upon the ruling of the court?
Well, that's what I was trying to think.
So then, what's preventing us from doing that?
We're trying to figure out a way.
Well, we're not going to get to that way if the language stays the way that it is, Senator.
Right.
We're not going to be there. Period.
So we have some time to...
we perhaps our assistant Don, or my assistant Don, but Don can work with our legislative writers to make this language contingent upon...
And in fairness to the senator from the 7th,
she was
entertaining that too. But I don't want to put words in her mouth. If this language is the only thing that she's comfortable with, then that is what it is.
Then we need
but,
to make it contingent upon what the court does, the final judgment of the court. Because I'm uncomfortable, Senator, allowing this to move forward, and we end up in court all over again because there's no, you know, contingency plan, and, you know, there are taxpayers out there who feel as though they were, given the short straw or whatever.
Well, this would seem to be something we could figure out together.
We're going to have to figure it out on the floor right now.
I mean, I think, you know, it shouldn't probably just be contingent upon the final adjudication.
So what is your suggestion? Let's work this out.
What's my suggestion? I haven't dictated I spent so little time in my law office, I'm not used to dictating anymore. okay, The senator from the 7th just passed me a note, and I think the idea is maybe to go offline here and maybe stand at ease or go to something else or whatever while we can try and work on that language, see if we can figure this thing out as senators can.
I would like to say that this time around, I would like to be part of the conversation.
You have my own, my personal invitation.
I just want to be assured of that. Last time, I was not part of the conversation.
You're always welcome.
Thank you so
now
much.
Now especially.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We are on the order of Senate substitute for Senate Bill 677 from the senator from Johnson. Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 15th.
I would ask unanimous consent to stand at ease.
Seeing no objection, the Senate shall stand at ease.
Somebody gonna give me the Senate comes. Senator, come back to order. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire the senator from the 14th.
Senator from the 14th, do you yield?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President.
Proceed.
Okay, Senator, we met over there at the research table, and we're trying to resolve this issue so that the state board understood that it's not their job to do something that's outside the law, but also to make sure that we weren't creating anything new for the court to consider as this case makes its way to final adjudication. Is that sort of how you would characterize what we were working on?
Yes, and it was a very hard decision for all sides of this issue, for everyone. And I think what we came up with is a true compromise. And so I am very thankful to the senator from the 7th, and I know how passionate she is about this. All you have to do is look in her eyes, and you know the passion that is within her about this issue, and I respect that profoundly. And I too have a passion about this issue. And what I appreciate is that you helped us both see how we are benefiting from the language that will be introduced in a few moments. And it's something that we are able to work with. It is not 100% from either one of us, but it goes in the direction that each of us want to go at the same time.
Well, and I appreciate your willingness to work on this. I know the senator from Johnson has been a prince to deal with us on this issue. And the senator from the 7th obviously cares very deeply about education and education reform, and appreciate her willingness to try to find common ground on this. So I'm going to sit down and let you offer the amendment.
President.
Senator from 14th.
I have an amendment, and it's been distributed, and I move for its adoption.
All right, send your amendment forward. Did you ask for a wavering of the reading? Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator from 14th, would you like to explain your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This amendment does two things. One, it says that DESE cannot counter what is in our law right now. And it also will impact what the court finally decides in the Turner versus Clayton court case. And if there are any further questions, any questions?
Senator from the 14th moves for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close. Senator from the 14th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is perfected. Her amendment is adopted. Any other discussion on Senate substitute for Senate Bill 677? Seeing none, Senator from Johnson, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from Johnson renews his motion that Senate substitute for Senate Bill 677 be adopted. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The substitute has been adopted. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would now move that Senate Bill Number 677 be declared perfected and order printed.
Senator from Johnson renews his motion, moves for the perfection and declared perfection and printed. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Senator from Johnson, recognized close.
I close.
Senator from Johnson renews his motion that Senate substitute for Senate Bill 677 be declared perfected and order printed. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill has been perfected. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if we have messages from the House? If we do, I would ask that they be read.
We do have messages from the House. Please read those messages.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted House Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 30, also House Concurrent Resolution 25, also House Concurrent Resolution 11, also House Bill 1593, an act relating to the Missouri Angel Investment Incentive Act, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Kremlis, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Seeing no announcements, Senator from 23rd. Oh, Senator from Stoddard. Senator Stoddard.
Would you please refer Senate Resolution Number 1762 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics?
It will be referred. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on the Judiciary will meet in the lounge on adjournment.
Seeing no more announcements, Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
Hearing his motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned under the rules.